the people responding to these car wrecks, the people responding that you want to be there to save your loved ones, $19 an hour, EMTs, $13 an hour. When we read a room, we're not only visually looking at it, but we're like, what are our spidey senses? Like, ooh, this doesn't feel right. It's because of the energy in the room. I have the experience, I have the background, and I can really get them to open up. And that's what people love hearing. Who are you? Deep down to your core, who are you as a person? At the end of the day, we're all human. Like being a paramedic, being a firefighter, being this or that, those are just titles. We take those away, we're all humans. And we all deserve our stories to be shared.
Welcome to Respond Resilience. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with a fellow podcast host, Mackenzie Teagues. And we love speaking with other podcast hosts because it opens up a whole different kind of conversation. Mackenzie is the founder of Raw Thoughts Podcast, and we'll be talking about being raw, real, authentic, and willing to share. We invite you to like and subscribe. We're on YouTube, Responder Resilience, Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, PBSRadio.com, Apple Podcasts, all the podcast platforms, and visit our website, ResponderTV.com, for past episodes and guest information.
This episode is made possible by Phase International. We're a team of patient handling and safety experts who supply cutting-edge equipment and training designed to keep EMS providers safe and healthy. For more information, visit phaseintl.com.
We'll be right back to speak with Mackenzie after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW, EMTB.
Today we're joined by Mackenzie. She's the host of the Raw Thoughts Podcast. And she possesses a remarkable ability to delve into sensitive topics by engaging with individuals who have firsthand experiences in various challenging areas. Her podcast specializes in offering a platform to first responders facing frontline struggles, as well as women dealing with postpartum depression, individuals living with bipolar disorder, veterans who've survived suicide attempts, and others who are navigating life through daunting challenges. And with her exceptional level of compassion, Mackenzie creates a safe and nurturing space for each guest to openly share their life experiences. Mackenzie, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Respond to Resilience.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it so very much.
Well, let's dive in. You're doing some really groundbreaking work, and particularly on the podcast platform. So before we get into that, can you tell us a little bit about your background in emergency services and what drew you into EMS?
Yeah, so I am a first responder daughter. So my dad being a paramedic, my mom being a 911 dispatcher, I grew up in, you know, dispatch in cop cars. Like I was around them all the time. That's really where it started. And when I was trying to figure out college, I ended up getting my EMT, going being wildland firefighter. That turned into just the calls that I was going on, the things that I was faced with, got me into being a paramedic. And never in my dreams did I ever think that I was going to follow my dad in his footsteps in doing that. But I loved what I did. And through that, there's been some challenges and setbacks, but there's also been some really great triumphs, and the podcast being one of them. One of my favorite things about being a paramedic is getting to connect with people instantaneously so that they trust me and what's occurring on their worst day. And so I'm super privileged to be on and talking with you and another fellow first responder and what we can do to change the narrative.
And you mentioned connection. That's so critical that we only really have like a moment, right, in the back of an ambulance or whether it's whatever scene we're on. Everything has got to happen fast. And so much of the quality of care can depend on that connection. So how do you do that? What's your, like, how do you have a routine, or is there some tools that you use?
I think I was gifted. Honestly, it is something that sometimes I can't really express, but I mean, it's very simple, getting on scene and staying calm. It is simple. You know, there is chaos all around you and there has to be a calmness. And when you come into that presence and you are that is an instant connection. They feel like they can trust you. They feel like you're going to be able to help them. Mm-hmm. And in whatever stage it is, they are looking for you for reassurance. And so with that, you have to be that stillness. You have to be the steadiness while everything else is going chaotic. And sometimes it's really silly things that you can connect them with. I mean, I just had a patient, I'm like, you look like Trump. And he just started laughing, you know, as his like nose is just bleeding. And so it's tiny little things that you just see in them that you can say, that you connect. And that's where that rawness and the willing to share, like, give them a compliment. You don't know what to do. Like, look them in the eye and you will find a connection within that person.
Yeah, it sounds like a presence, right? Being in that moment right there with them.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It is truly meeting them where they are in their situation, whether that be, you know, a trauma, a medical, like there's always history, right? That we ask the patient medications, you know, procedures, but I want to know what's happening right this second. Like those things matter and those things occur, but I need to know your signs and symptoms right this second. And that's going to determine what my treatment plan is. And I ask that my patients be truthful with me, right? Because that is my next step of decisions. And so I need my people to also be very truthful with me because I need to direct what next best decision is.
Sure. Yeah. And information is so crucial for what we do, how we're able to perform at our best. And I'd love to kind of fast forward now. So you made the connection with the patient. What's your philosophy on closure? Like, you know, when you've dropped off the patient and they're, you know, they're moving on in the process of getting healthcare, it's really hard for us sometimes, especially in EMS, to know, you know, what happened next. How are they doing? You know, what was the prognosis or the end result? Do you have any kind of thoughts on closure and how you personally get closure with some of your calls?
Yeah, it is hard because we don't get a lot of closure, right? We can drop people off and maybe we can call the hospital back and ask. They typically just give us what they diagnosed them with, you know, what were their injuries, what were their prognosis is, and that's really it. I'm only there for a phase of their medical issues or their day or their worst day. Like I'm just there for a brief moment. So what can I do in those moments to make a lasting impression is really just where I, you know, have closure within myself. It's also just within that connection, just wishing them the best. Like, I don't know what the outcome is going to be. I may not know because the outcome could be 5 years from now that something occurred, but I was just in, you know, their life for that phase doing what I know what to do. And that is a gift. And so really that closure is just saying like, you know what, I just wish you the best. Like, I hope you get well. I hope you, you know, because there's going to be other people in the next phase. Mm-hmm. There's going to be nurses. There's going to be doctors. There's going to be, you know, the line just keeps going and going and going. I was only there for a brief second. That's what I can do. And that's right. Closure for me. It's also letting a lot of things go. Mm-hmm. It is reframing structures. It is, you know, reframing what you saw and how you dealt with that for your own sake. There is more times that I ran into incidences off of the job and off of the clock that have impacted me far more than the ones that are on the clock because mm-hmm. I wasn't prepared. I didn't have equipment. I didn't know, you know, what to expect. I now have to direct more people and call more of the situation than it is going in uniform and knowing that I come with a presence. And so really that closure is not for the patient. It's for me. It is being okay with that and just saying, you know, I did the best that I can. And there's a bigger plan for that person. And there's a higher power taking control of this.
Wow. That's great. I love your philosophy on that. And it, yeah, as you know, some of us tend to be control freaks and want everything to go perfectly and, you know, the way we want it to go. Sometimes we just have to let go of that because it is the question of we do what we can do, the best we can do, and then it's out of our hands.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that control factor is what a lot of us first responders get stuck on, is that, you know, we have this kind of like heroic stance that you're going to save lives and you're going to really impact people and blah, 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 blah. Right. And then you see death and then people don't make it. And then procedures that you do don't go correctly. And then now we take it on personally. Now we think that we've done something wrong. Now we want to change the whole procedure. It's like, that's why we have protocols. That's why we fall back on our trainings, because we, at the end of the day, are not in control. We can facilitate. We're like the liaisons between us and God, right? Yeah. Like, I can try to help you, but like, at the end of the day, like, we've seen crazy things. We've seen people live that should not have lived, and we've seen people die that should not have died. And it, that had nothing to do with me personally or my medical decisions. Now, does that play a factor in training? Absolutely. But that control part, at the end of the day, we're not in control. And to let that go is so difficult.
Yes, yes. It is. And I think a lot of us struggle with it and can accumulate over the years of a career and turn into, you know, some of the trauma and post-traumatic stress that we have to deal with as first responders.
We'll come right back to our conversation with Mackenzie Teagues after this special edition of Resilience Toolbox.
On this installment of Resilience Toolbox, we're speaking with Rick Binder, CEO of FaZe International, spotlighting how to avoid the most common source of injury as an emergency care provider. So, Rick, I know you're passionate about this topic. How did you become so passionate about it, and what do we need to know?
My passion for this topic in particular really started about 10 years ago, a little over, when my father, you know, passed the metaphorical torch down to me after he invented the Binder lift for my mother, who was an emergency care provider. And he made the Binder lift to help her avoid injury from lifting patients while performing her job duties. And so in the last decade of helping my father bring the Binder lift to market, I also started to notice all of these other areas in patient handling that needed improvement. We're still moving patients in a very old-fashioned way. And so if we always do what we've always done, we're going to continue to get what we've always got. And historically speaking, according to CDC, year over year without contest, the most common source of injury to emergency care providers is from patient movement, lifting and moving patients. So we have a lot of room as an industry to improve there. And so that's what my focus has been on for the last decade.
So Rick, with your holistic approach, what are the top three mistakes you see providers make during patient handling that leads to chronic pain and injury?
After the last decade of pouring all of my available time and resources into this topic, I started to notice trends. And in these trends, I noticed these top three mistakes. And the first one is using emergent moves in non-urgent situations. And so to recap what the categories of patient movement is real quick. So we have emergent moves. This is when the environment's becoming dangerous for either the patient or us, or the patient's condition is deteriorating so rapidly, like seconds truly count. We're grabbing ankles, we're doing whatever we can to get the patient out. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be using this move too often, but the problem is we are. So that's where it's much more dangerous for us and our patient, because then there's urgent moves. That's the next category. The difference between urgent and emergent is in urgent moves, it's still an emergency. We're still moving quickly. We're still moving with purpose, but we're taking time to use a piece of equipment. The next category of patient movement is the non-urgent movements. And that's where we're waiting for extra resources, and we're definitely using a piece of equipment, making it as safe for us and the patient as possible. But too often, I hear of providers going in, and we have the example of a 350-pound patient stuck in a bathtub. Mm-hmm. We're going in there, the patient's stable, they just need help back up. But when we're not using a piece of equipment to get that patient up, and then we're doing so in a way it's much more stressful and adds a lot of compressive and shear forces on our musculoskeletal system. So using emergent moves in non-urgent situations is mistake number one. Mistake number two is routinely lifting and carrying outside of our power zone. The way I remember it is your knees to your neck. Really, it's about 12 inches above from the ground, but from your knees to your neck and 12 inches in front of your body. If we can keep our hands in this zone, this power zone, we're going to do really good. This is the most safest area that we can bear weight. As soon as we start reaching out of this area, we're causing severe compressive and shear forces on our musculoskeletal system that we may not see or even feel at the time, but it adds up to chronic pain and injury. And one of the places we do this most often is with a rigid device. So anytime we're picking up a patient, let's say on a backboard, and we're bringing our hands all the way down to the ground, that's well outside of our power zone, right? We need to raise that lift point up to about our knees. And there's really two easy ways that you can do this. One is there's really inexpensive handle extenders we can attach to a rigid device that will raise the lift point, that will attach universally any rigid device. You can also put your soft stretcher underneath your rigid device. So if you put your backboard on top of your soft stretcher and then carry by your soft stretcher handles, that's going to raise your lift point. And so that's how we can avoid that mistake. The next mistake is mistake number three, and that's lifting and carrying bariatric patients when we don't actually really need to. We're showing up on scene and we have these bariatric patients that they deserve quality and prompt care, but we're showing up and a lot of times providers aren't equipped and trained to do that. And so we're manually lifting these patients when there's mechanical lifts like the Mangar Elk. It's widely used in the UK and Australia and Canada. We're helping bring it to the market here in the US. It's a long ways to go, but it's an airbag that inflates. It actually lifts these patients so we don't have to. And that, of course, anytime we can engineer out the solution, just like what we've done with power cots and power loads and things like that, especially for these bariatric patients. And then for carrying these bariatric patients, we can avoid that by sliding them, getting these extrication devices that we can slide patients out of their residence. And we can even put a backboard and attach a backboard to the foot of the stretcher with some simple straps. And we can slide that bariatric patient up the backboard like a ramp and onto the stretcher. So then we got a patient, you know, let's say from the bathtub all the way out onto the stretcher without ever manually lifting or carrying that patient. And so if we just made those three changes and we avoided those mistakes, I guarantee you we would see injuries fall and would no longer be the most common cause of injury.
So Rick, thanks for covering that piece. Now, what can fire and EMS personnel do to avoid the mistakes you were talking about?
You know, the first thing that they can do is go back to their ambulance and take inventory of the equipment that they have available to them. Every emergency care provider deserves to have equipment that is proven to help them perform their job duties safely and without putting themselves at unnecessary harm and risk. So there's five categories of equipment. There's lifting and assisting devices, there's carrying devices, there's extrication equipment, so it's like your stair chairs, things like that, your stretchers, and your transferring equipment. Provider has to have a piece of equipment in all of those categories, otherwise they're going to be making these mistakes of using emergent moves in non-urgent situations or reaching and operating out of the power zone or unnecessarily lifting patients. You can also go to our website, phaseintl.com, and most of these pieces of equipment we offer free field trials on to allow providers, once they know what categories of equipment they're missing, they can then trial it and see if it's a good fit for them and their patients. And another thing they can do is train. We offer a free hour and a half continuing education certified training program on patient handling. And so it'll take a much deeper dive than what we've done today on how to avoid these mistakes and what is causing the chronic pain and injury that's plaguing our industry and how we can change our behavior and get better outcomes in the future.
It really is another set of tools for the toolbox that are critical. And I want to thank you, Rick, for joining us today on Resilience Toolbox and sharing this important information. We wish you continued success as well.
Thanks, David.
I wanted to shift gears into the Roth Thoughts podcast and kind of what led you to get into that and create that kind of a platform. And did you see a particular need in the first responder community that brought you to starting it?
Yeah. So it was kind of like a whim idea. I love talking with people. I love connecting with people. And I was like, how can I do more of this? Like, how can I be able to do this on a daily basis and make an impact with what I do? And so I started the podcast after a breakup, and it really helped me in my personal life forge forward. I didn't want it to be focused on just first responders, though. And I say that because us first responders go to these people that are having the worst days as well. We're going to these suicides. We're going to these places that, you know, they're in trials. And so why disclude them? Because they are part of our story as well. Mm-hmm. And so what I've noticed, though, is is I can have those first responders. I have the experience, I have the background, and I can really get them to open up. And that's what people love hearing. That's what people really love and connect with, is those trial stories. Mm-hmm. And us first responders have a lot more of them than the general public. And they need to know that, you know? And so I really didn't foresee, you know, it really being focused on first responders. I still don't want it to be specifically solely first responders, yeah, because I want the people that they respond to be included as well. And at the end of the day, we're all human. Like, being a paramedic, being a firefighter, being this or that, those are just titles. If we take those away, we're all humans, and we all deserve our stories to be shared.
Exactly. And you reminded me of a guest that we've had on the show who is not a first responder, but was in the audience at Las Vegas at a country music festival. And he was there in 2017 when the mass shootings happened. And he, after getting his family to safety, made the choice to go in and start to help people and save people at personal risk. And now his name is Todd Blylevin, an amazing person, amazing story. But that's, to me, a perfect example of someone who's not a first responder yet is in a situation where it doesn't matter what your title is. You are there to be of service to our yes. fellow humans and do what you have to do. You know, not everybody's going to make that choice, but he did. And it's such a powerful example of service to humanity.
Absolutely.
Our greatest asset is a thinking, knowledgeable, well-trained, physically fit and healthy firefighter. It is the continual drive to be better, to improve, and to never be satisfied with the status quo. Success begins long before the alarm comes in or the tones go off. Success is nothing new in the FDNY. We did not suddenly wake up one day and become good at what we do. We need enthusiastic leadership and training that has a clear understanding of what's at stake. That is teamwork. That is dedication. That is well-trained firefighters ready to go to work on game day. The time to train is now, before the incident or game day.
We've all seen the leader who's tactically proficient but lacks the people skills for true inspirational leadership. Cornerstones of Leadership, on and off the fire ground, discusses the soft skills necessary for success, both on and off the fire ground.
This episode is made possible by Phase International, cutting-edge equipment and training designed to keep EMS providers safe and healthy. For more information, visit phaseintl.com.
Let's talk about being raw, and what does that mean in your world and on your podcast, and then how does that kind of play out with the guests that you have?
Yeah, so being raw is really to be real, authentic, and willing to share. And every aspect of that, of the willing to share part, can be so different. Maybe that's with a coworker, maybe that's with your family, maybe that's just with your journal and yourself. We have to self-analyze ourselves all the time. We analyze other people continuously. It's a survival mechanism. But how often are we doing it for ourselves? And so that is really what being real to me is. When we talk about these really difficult situations, the best thing for someone to be is just real. They don't have to make the story up, right? They don't have to think about what they did, where it's their past, it's their shadow. And so I don't want them to be ashamed of what that past looks like and what that darkness looks like, but let that darkness be the surrounding to your light. Being authentic is just being true to yourself. And that takes work. Like, figuring out who you to your core is taking away those titles, taking away that identity, you know, taking away, like, who are you deep down to your core? Who are you as a person? And I say all of these because I've also been doing the work on this. Like, who is Mackenzie behind being a realtor and being a podcaster and being, you know, a paramedic? Like, I struggled with those things. And it's like, no, you know what? I'm a girl that I love to help people, and I come with compassion and kindness and lead with my heart, and business will follow. Like, that's who I am, right? That has nothing to do with what title I have. That's authentically me. Mm-hmm. And that willing to share part is, if you have, you know, a platform, share it, speak it, talk about it, right? If that's within your department, if that's within your family, talk about it. Like, you're not doing anybody a service to keeping all of your knowledge a secret. Like, share the knowledge. We all want to learn from that. So that really is what it means to me. And what I foster within my podcast and bringing people on. And within being raw and vulnerable is where you get the support. People cannot support you if they don't know what you're going through. So if we lead with raw, we find vulnerability, we get connections, we can get support.
Great. And you, so you spoke about doing the work and kind of, you know, finding out who you truly are and what your gifts are to give to the world. What was your process, or what is your process to kind of explore that?
It's an ongoing process. life is an ongoing process, right? We're in different phases. We are, we have different external factors that play into who we are. And so it really is a practice. I'm still practicing it, just like yoga, just like going to the gym. It is something that you have to continuously be curious about, not judging yourself, really seeing where are these things like coming up from. And just as soon as you think like you're done and you've done the work, you're going to be sparked by something else. You're like, ooh, I didn't realize that like I needed to work on that again. Right. And that is the process of digging the layers. And, you know, really the best kind of like visual I can think of is we all shove everything down, right? We press everything down. We don't want to talk about it. We press. Well, when we start unleashing that treasure box and bringing that up, we're going to have stuff come up that we have no idea is coming from. That's our brain. That's what our pathways do. That's what our organ does of our brain, right? And so it's a continuous thing. Yoga, breath work, journaling, you know, Reiki. Like, I want to explore all of the things, because each time that I do, I find a new part of me. I find a new part of my past. I find a new way that I can help other people. I find like my next level that I get to serve the next, you know, the level that I just came from. And all of that is just, you know, truly leading with your heart, being a service to others, and knowing that it is going to take time. It is going to be a process, and you have to practice it.
It is obviously an ongoing process, because life is ongoing and ever evolving. So I love how you share that. So for us as hosts of Responder Resilience, we speak with a lot of guests, and it sometimes to me, it's like a masterclass in adversity and triumph. You know, we get to be kind of witness to what people have been through and how they've overcome it. We learned about some of the incredible work they're doing out there in the first responder world. So in your podcast conversations, what have you learned from your interviews and, you know, survival stories and triumphs over trauma?
Yeah. The biggest thing is to lead with curiosity and not judgment. It's so easy for us to look at somebody externally and think that we know what their story is and think that we know what they've gone through, and we just don't. And that's where that communication comes from, being curious, asking those questions, but also listening. And it's so hard for us to stop and to truly listen to other people, because we do. We want to say things, right? Right. I mean, I know I'm a very talkative person. Like, I will be the first one to be like, you got to tell me to shut up, right? But with that, with listening, you can find where the problems are. And if you can find where the problems are, then we can find where solutions are. And we can work for solutions to fix these problems. And so one of my biggest things, you know, on my podcast, I've interviewed over 90 people now, is I'm not the judge of their story. I just am a platform for them to share their voice. Mm-hmm. Who they connect with are the people in their life. And I, you know, just am so open to that. And you have to be, opened and let those barriers come down that we've built up over a long, long, long time, right? We have to reframe ourselves to being able to say, you know what? I'm going to lead with love on this. I may not trust them, but I'm going to show them what love is. And then through that, we can trust. And I think people want to start with the trust part and say, I don't want to know about them, and I don't want them to know about me because I don't trust them. What are they going to do with this information? Well, if they're a good person, they're going to just listen, right? And if they're not, then you're going to get them out of your life.
Yeah. It's almost like a sacred place, right? We're creating this, you know, environment on the podcast platform for people to be vulnerable, to go where, you know, a lot of them a lot of us don't go very often. And to me, it's a privilege, and you have to really respect that sacred nature of someone telling their story.
Yeah. And you know, some of the great things that I love hearing when I'm interviewing people is like, oh, that's a good question. I've never been asked that. I'm like, good. I'm glad I get to be the one that like dives a little bit deeper into your story and asks you those hard questions. Like that's where we get to learn, is asking those hard questions. And I've done that in the field as a paramedic. Like I've had to ask those really hard questions. Now I'm translating it into other parts of my life. And that is who I am.
Come on. Check it.
This episode is made possible by FaZe International, cutting-edge equipment and training designed to keep EMS providers safe and healthy. For more information, visit FazeINTL.com.
Let's dive into a little bit of a different topic, and that's EMS. And, you know, sometimes it could look like EMS is really stuck in terms of the issues and recruitment and retention. So what are your thoughts about, is there a way to fix it? And how do we deal with, you know, the pay inequity in within the EMS profession?
Yeah, this is a big topic and something that definitely impacts me. When I was a paramedic, we worked underneath of a hospital base, and then that transitioned to back to the county. The county commissioners then took over. And to tell you the truth, the leadership have failed us. Huge pay cut. We are doing our job $19 an hour. Like the people responding to these car wrecks, the people responding that you want to be there to save these, you know, your loved ones, $19 an hour. EMTs, $13 an hour, right? Why is that? A lot of people don't understand why that is. Well, the money comes from the counties, the cities, and we actually, there's only about eight states that have EMS as a essential worker. Mm-hmm. What that means is that the police departments and fire departments actually get help with funding. EMS does not. Especially in Idaho, we do not run ambulances out of the fire station. They are completely separate. And so that's really where our pay is coming from, you know, and that's also where people are leaving EMS. You can go and be a paramedic on a fire truck, have less calls, have less critical incidences, get better pay, be more supported.
Benefits.
Why the hell? Benefits, yeah, a union. Why the hell wouldn't you do that, mm-hmm. right? One reason why I got out of being a paramedic and into real estate, it just doors were closing on me. And I was like, there's something else that I need to be doing. And it's led me to where I am today. But that doesn't come without a huge struggle. And I think one of our biggest steps is that we need our legislation, we need our states, we need the people that are making these decisions on our pay to actually truly know what we go through. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a big gap there. They don't want to listen. I just a couple weeks ago was at the Capitol for a different speech and got up, spoke about this. I had a county commissioner look at me and ask me, what county was that? And we don't do that in our county. I said, you know what? I said, you have your paramedics working a 56-hour shift. That is 56 hours they are on that ambulance. Do you know why your people are leaving? As I was talking about this, he looked a different way and didn't even listen to what I had to say. And that is the problem.
At the end of the day, it's recruitment and retention. And it's, it's dollars and cents for the communities who are losing first responders at an alarming rate. So I think, you know, your work and your going to speak with people at the Capitol is huge. And, you know, we all need to kind of be grassroots about spreading the word and increasing awareness, because obviously the word is, you know, hasn't reached the right ears yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where a lot of my passion comes from, is I think there's a lot of talk about the military and veterans and what they've gone through. Mm-hmm. They don't see a fraction of what we do. They're not the front lines. First responders are. They're the ones here protecting our country, our communities, and our people. And we don't have the support. We don't have the VA. We don't have anywhere to go to. And yet we are seeing traumatic things every freaking day. We are dealing with traumatic things every freaking day. And we don't have the support. So there's the problem. How do I solve that? I have a voice. I have a platform. I have people that are within my family affected by this. I'm going to stand strong and I'm going to get my voice louder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, really, it's a PR issue, right? It's like veterans, you know, bless them all. They have amazing organizations behind them, charitable organizations and other media organizations. And they're in the public eye quite a bit. But I think first responders and particularly EMS, in my opinion, they're, you know, behind the scenes quite a bit, right? The public mm-hmm. really only sees what we do when they call 911 or they happen to pass by a call where we're operating on scene. You know, we're on demand, right? We're just like, if you need us, then you know, then you're aware of what we do. But otherwise, it's kind of like the best kept secret.
Right, right. And the public, right, just thinks that cops are there to eat donuts and that mm-hmm. the firefighters are just there to kick their feet up and have a good meal, right? We don't even talk about EMS. People don't even know what EMS is. They're like, what do you mean? Like, there's a difference between an EMT and a paramedic and who's getting sent to me and what's happening. They have no idea, right? And, you know, I was actually looking at a stat yesterday. I don't typically like stats, but this was a very profound and recent one that was done from the military. About 60% of the military never actually goes to combat. Of that 40% that does, only about 10% actually see the war zone. 100% of first responders see the war zone.
Wow. That's such a incredible way to reframe it. Because we know that we talk about this, right? We are, you know, we are doing this day in and day out. It's not like a tour. You come back, you know, you do a couple of tours, you come back and you're back in civilian life. We are doing this, you know, shift after shift after shift, year after year. And it's, and we're bringing it home with us, right? Day after day. That's another aspect of this, how it impacts our loved ones. Do you have any thoughts on that? Like what people can do to kind of be more effective as spouses and partners and parents when they're involved in EMS?
Yeah, I think it starts with our first responders first is being raw when you come home and letting them know, hey, I had a really hard shift. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't have to go into all of the details, but having your family involved with what you do has them to be able to support you. And when you leave, you know, when you say, I'm leaving all of my work at work, guess what? You work in your community. When you're driving down the road and you see that intersection and you pulled a dead baby out of that car, that is a moment, right? You're within your community. And now you're sticking that in your brain. You're sticking that within your body and not sharing that at all. Mm-hmm. Instead of having a conversation with your spouse, having a conversation with your family and saying, you know what? That was really difficult. Like I envisioned my own daughter or I envisioned my own baby. I don't even have kids and, mm-hmm. and children, right, are one of our biggest things that impact us. And so it really starts with that first responder being brought home and talking about it. It also comes with the spouses and the family members to giving them grace. If they need some extra time, if you're noticing things that are different, also speak up, right? If the cards are not matching, if your spouse is coming home and they're so aggravated and just mad and they go and have a bottle of wine or drink beer or have their whiskey, right? And they don't want to talk to you and they say, oh, I'm fine, right? The fuck you are, right? I'll call you out on your bullshit right now. Mm-hmm. That's what our spouses need to be able to be trained to do. That's what our spouses and families need to say. Quit your bullshit. I know you're not fine because look at what your habits are. Look at what your trends are. Look at what's going on. When you're in a healthy state, when you're in a mindset and a healthy brain, and that comes to your mental health, like we can have these conversations. We can notice these things. And then we have an action plan. We have things that we fall back on. We have things that we say, you know what? I haven't gone to the gym in a while. I haven't gone outside in a while. I haven't, you know, seen my friends for a while. Cool. Let's do that now. Mm-hmm. And so I think it really is, you know, within the family, it still comes back to that first responder. It still comes back to what we see, what we deal with. Nobody knows. We do. So it's our duty to protect ourselves. It's our duty to survive, you know, or make ourselves survive so that we can continue to do this job and we're not eating bullets.
Right, right. When it comes down to resilience, right, we need to not only take care of ourselves, but our families. In taking care of ourselves, have a toolbox that we can go to, like you were discussing, you know, Reiki or yoga or nature, whatever that looks like. Maybe it's podcasting that kind of fills our bucket and that makes us better first responders and better, you know, spouses, parents, partners.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not only about, you know, filling our cups, it's also relieving our cups. Like I go to yoga because it relieves me. Like I can get that out of me, right? If I get the bad energy out of me, I have more room for good energy. Now I'm looking for that. Now I'm shifting for that. Now I have a much wider bandwidth to be able to deal with what I need to deal with. When we are so overloaded and pressing, our bandwidth is so small. And so the tiniest little things, right? Like, okay, I dropped my coffee today and now I'm crying. Why am I crying? Because of a call I had for 3 months ago. Like I call that the champagne effect, right? Like we just like blow up because our bandwidth is so, so small. How do we widen our bandwidth? We do these things for our mental health and our well-being and our quality of life. That's how we increase our bandwidth. That's how we build the resiliency. That's how we bounce back in a better state than just getting stuck.
Yes. Yeah. I love how you touched on the releasing the energy. It's, you know, I strongly believe that as first responders, we pick up a lot of negative energy or we're exposed to it in highly charged, dramatic situations. And, you know, I think every human being is somewhat an emotional sponge. We take that away, we carry it with us. And I love how you're talking about, you know, releasing it, having a way to let it out and kind of, you know, get back to a baseline.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's because we're trained for that, right? Like when we talk about getting on scene and reading a room, when we read a room, we're not only visually looking at it, but we're like, what are our spidey senses? Like, ooh, this doesn't feel right. Why does it not feel right? It's because of the energy in the room, right? We can have good energy. We can have bad energy. We can just have neutral energy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's one of those things because it's like, oh, this like woo woo girl, right? Talking about this. No, like we're literally trained to walk into a room and feel the presence. What are we feeling? That's energy. How are we taking that in? That is something that I know as an empath, I struggle with. I go to an energy healer. I clean that out. I get rid of it. And she's, you know, talked to me. And why I believe it so much is because she has picked up on things where I was holding on to it. And I'm just like crying, like, how the hell do you know this, right? Well, it's because it's energy stuck inside me. I'm holding on to that. I have got to let it go. And so we are more apt to picking up this energy because that's what we're supposed to do. That is us connecting. That is us being that calmness, right? That is us taking that negativity and that like chaos and calming it, us taking on that energy and dispersing it. We have to do it for ourselves as well.
Yes, absolutely. All great stuff. What are you excited about? What do you have kind of in the wings or what are you going to be doing next? What kind of projects do you have you're thinking about doing?
Yeah, so I'm really stepping into peer support coaching. So I have some clients right now. I've lived the experiences, right? I understand that that's such a hurdle to getting people into counseling and therapy is the experience part. I just want to be another peer support for you. I'm going to give a shout out to my guy in Texas, Medic. We had a suicide save. Like it was amazing. The things that I was teaching him, he fell back onto it and did not commit suicide that day. Right. That's a huge win. Conrad from PTSD 911 is going to be coming to Boise. I'm so excited. We're nailing down dates, either November 12th or 13th. That's my stage. Like I get to be the one. I said yesterday, I'm like, it's my turn, right? Like I've had all of these people on my podcast. Like I'm ready to shine the light on some things that I feel so passionately about. Within that next year, I'm going to say it. We're going to have me and another first responder that has been on my podcast, one of my best listened, are actually remaking our own first responder conference. So I'm super excited about that. Getting to speak, getting to be part of Sean Thomas's first responder conference in February. Like, there's just a lot of things happening, coaching agencies, getting in with Mindbase. Like, there is just an all around high vibe going on, and it's all for my people. It's all for being able to be compassionate and serve them.
Oh, that sounds amazing. And I'm so glad you're connected with first responder conferences. We just interviewed Sean Thomas on the show, and it's having been to one of her conferences, I'm still getting benefits from it 6-8 months later. It's a great organization. So it's so cool you're connecting with them, and all the other projects you're working on sound amazing. You're an inspiring person, Mackenzie, and it's Thank been you. So cool to have you on our podcast and kind of learn more about your work and your mission. So thanks for spending this time with us.
Absolutely, David. I'm so privileged. And, fun story about Sean, actually, I went to her conference. I was working as a paramedic. I flew myself to Seattle and went to one of her very first conferences. And that was back in 2018. Mm-hmm. Got them to come here to Boise. And so I share that because that's patience. That is doing the work, right? Who I was back then to who I am now, I'm just continuing to gather all of these toolbox, tools for my own toolbox. Mm-hmm. And so it's really cool to be able to see the patience in my work and what I'm doing, and knowing that, like, it is a daily grind. It is a long-term process to continue to do, and we're not going to have things overnight. And so I love, and I'm so privileged to be on your podcast and getting to talk to your listeners and, expanding our network, because we're like-minded, we're in this together. And I'm so happy for that.
Bless you for all you're doing, all the great work you're doing, and looking forward to hearing more great stuff about your podcast and everything else.
Awesome. Thank you, David. I appreciate it.
Please remember to like and subscribe. YouTube, Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, all the podcast platforms. And visit our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. Until the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.